Welcome to Community Matters, a podcast about the power of music community. My name is McKeegan Voice. In an era of streaming and AI and algorithmic discovery, sometimes we forget that there are humans behind the music. On Community Matters, we're chatting with artists who share their stories and how community has impacted their music careers, especially in times of struggle. A supportive community is one of the things that inspires us to start making music and then keep making it. And this is an ode to those relationships. We hope it's a reminder of just how important people are to the music that we love. Today I'm speaking with Andrew Fox. Andrew's a musician from New York. He's also spent time in Berlin and Paris, and in his music, the energy of the Berliner techno scene and that romantic Parisian allure are nearly as present as the Brooklyn indie aesthetic that surrounded him when he was coming into his own in the mid-2000s.
How you surviving, dude?
Cooped up, but you know, I'm hanging in. How about you?
Yeah, cooped up. Most of my projects can work remote anyway, with the exception of performing. So it's not like a tremendous change in lifestyle as far as day-to-day routine on like a all music day. So I feel okay. I'm talking to more and more people, which is good.
Cool.
I think it's mostly important not to feel alone in these times, you know?
It's hard, but I have hope that we'll come out of this being more grateful for having the ability to be with actual people in physical spaces. And hopefully that gratitude actually extends to the future when we have that opportunity again and, you know, people feel more connected.
Absolutely, man. I mean, I'm feeling like the incredible value of every connection that I'm making during the day that isn't an email.
I know.
I've never had more video conferencing during my day.
I know. Same.
My lady friend's here and we've been going on like little walks, get some air, and then you see the faces of people and everyone has like a confused expression on, you know, you can read it on everyone's face. If anyone sneezes in a block radius, like I'm clocking it. Yeah. Strange times, man. Strange times.
I first met Andrew a few years back when I interviewed him for an EP he was releasing under his moniker Visuals. We met at a cafe in Brooklyn, and I actually found out I was good friends with his brother at the end of the interview. It'd be far from the last time I found someone with a connection to Andrew. The words, "Oh yeah, I know Andrew, great guy," have been said to me in a number of unrelated conversations with seemingly unconnected music people. It's a testament to the scope of his involvement in the greater music community. So to start, we dove into the communities that would eventually become his artistic foundation when he settled back in New York after college.
When I first moved back from college, I was living in a house of musicians, and one of the roommates was running a cable TV show out of the basement that brought bands in and recorded live performances and interviews. Within the first year, that show was picked up by Pitchfork TV. So constantly in my first 2 years in New York, I was feeling surrounded by touring indie bands, people interested in music from a production level, like videographers and those people, and then just fans, and everyone was just coming to the house. And it was a really inspiring and fertile time in New York anyway. It was around 2007, 2008. And there was just all of these DIY venues, most of which are now closed or have iterated into something else. So when I first started to record and release music in New York as like a 20-something, you know, with aspirations, it was already with this sense of community and with these standards of excellence that were around me, and also a ton of musicians to bounce ideas off of and share skills, just figure out how to do it. You know, everyone in that house had a little recording rig, and some of the folks were more technically adept than others, and some were better writers and some were better drummers, and we had the ability to very quickly bring each other up, and did. Everyone today has gone down slightly different paths, but it was just like so important to have people around me at the time who knew a little bit more technically and maybe a lot more culturally to just broaden me and give me a sense of what matters in the communication of a song and how to understand how it's going to be received by audiences and how to feel like you're not just outputting songs into a cultureless void, you know? Half of the house was part of a band, actually still is, called Small Black. So Juan Pazansky, who also had the TV show in the basement, and Jeff Curtin. And actually, we had all had a band together with my friend Sam Regadry, who's now mostly doing these wonderful sound baths a couple of times a week around New York. Cool. And community building that way. So that was like the house. And then there was all of these people coming through to jam and collaborate. I brought Dave Harrington into the fold early into that community. And he has obviously gone on to do many things in several different musical worlds. And then brought me as well along with him, which is how it goes. Mm-hmm. A band from Nashville who was called Those Darlins, that was kind of like our sisters in the Nashville scene. And they got their start as like a folk and clogging trio.
Wow.
And they did a bunch of the recording of their first record in our basement with Jeff. And I remember they all came. They had these like horrible wooden clogs that they could all as a trio clog together with.
Cool.
But they were great songwriters. And unfortunately, the front woman songwriter passed away a couple years ago of cancer. She was only 27. Her name's Jessie. And she had an enormous impact on her community in Nashville. There was like more than 500 people at her memorial service. And she had all these inroads into obviously other musicians, but activism as well. And it just, as an example, like just spirals outward. And the value of knowing Those Darlins was like deeply spiritual, to feel like, okay, we're doing this in New York and they're doing that in Nashville, and we're kind of doing it all together. We're like, we actually are exchanging little ideas and writing songs together and growing our scenes separately and yet together. This was also like the beginning of the MySpace boom, a year or two into like bands breaking huge from a couple of tracks out on MySpace. And MySpace, you know, it was still kind of like the wild west of the internet. That's where you'd go to check new ideas and where people were getting excited. And it was very organic. So I still count that as community, even though it's virtual. But I had it both ways. Like I had a very strong local musical community to start off in. And then this moment of felt virtual community was having impact. People were launching careers off of it.
Mm-hmm. How's online community changed for you since MySpace and, you know, up until today?
So I think for a while after MySpace kind of receded, SoundCloud had still a community feel, and I felt like there was a lot of discovery going on there in music of a lot of types. I was already kind of in the electronic domain like by 2012, 2013. And I think for a stretch there, I felt that same energy where people who were not necessarily industry professionals, but were like fans and excited, were on SoundCloud a lot, scooping up new tunes and helping artists reach a larger audience and platform. And now, you know, because everything has become so much more pay to play, and obviously Spotify's dominance alongside, you know, Apple Music and other centralized streaming services, there's been kind of like a washing away, it feels, of that cultural element in music discovery online. And it's like has a lot to do with the medium, you know. The medium is the message, and Spotify, for instance, but also Apple Music and all the others, they don't really have an engaging social dimension. You know, like there are tools, like there is that sidebar that shows you what your friends are watching, but like there's no comments, there's just no sense of authorship as like a fan. There's no like interaction with the artist as a fan, which, I mean, it's an official platform, so in one way it's good that it's clean, but it's also so dominant that everything else has become vastly less powerful, with the exception, I think, of Bandcamp, which is still the only platform, I think, that is not in the red, like actually generates revenue.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Isn't just like riding some sort of tech bubble. But Bandcamp, I feel like it's used by one step deeper, not necessarily industry, but hardcore fans who are really on the lookout. Like your casual listener probably doesn't have the Bandcamp app. That's my sense. Since the rise of the conglomerated streaming services, there's just been less space for organic discovery and a lot less space for journalism, obviously, in aiding that, you know, like there's no MP3 blogs anymore. Artists are paying PR people to like basically send journalists emails to regurgitate their press releases because no one has time to write reviews of things, both because of the influx of so many artists doing this and the lack of funding to let journalists devote time to thoughtful reviews. You know,
Andrew's first EP as Visuals was produced by Dave Harrington, who Andrew mentioned earlier, and Nicholas Jarr. Together, Nico and Dave make up the band Darkside. The three of them went to school together and they remain friends. Andrew's released music on Nicholas Jarr's Other People label, and he actually opened for Darkside in Berlin on their first tour, DJing the main room of Berghain, the infamous techno mecca. For his most recent record, Shock by Shock, Andrew ditched the Visuals name and used his own. And this is all important context to understand where an artist fits. The framework in which we can understand their music and associate to it. It's a frame of reference. That context isn't as readily available today as it once was, unfortunately. And with the decline of the more thoughtful journalism Andrew was talking about, the situation isn't getting much better. Actually, Andrew was considering a career in journalism himself.
I was considering a career in journalism.
Yeah, stay away from it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think actually we talked about this the first time we met up, precisely when I was trying to get into the workforce and like doing editorial. The collapse of that industry was like imminent, and advertisers were pulling out of magazines, and then magazines were closing, and it was like a domino effect. And at some point, an editor at Tokyon Mag, where I was interning as like, you know, arts and culture editorial staff, was like, look, you will never really make money in journalism. So if you're trying to be a musician, go work at a bar.
Yeah.
More or less.
That was good advice.
Yeah, it was good advice. I mean, I wish it wasn't like that. You know, like I wish you could still work at those magazines, and journalists weren't savagely underpaid, especially in the realm of culture, because like we need that dialogue also to have a sense of community. Like the journalists are a really important nodal point. They're connectors as well. And the presence of media at smaller shows makes a big difference to how people understand themselves and their scene, you know.
Totally.
As much as people like to rag on Brooklyn Vegan, you know, it's like done a lot for this world.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that just to provide all the context that is necessary to understand how an artist fits in, that deepens an appreciation so much.
Yeah. And artists are learning from that context. You know, it's
absolutely,
it's a positive feedback loop when it works right. You know, like a young artist should be consuming as much great music writing as they can to understand how people are going to consume their work and like what the conversation is. I think the music media is so critical to community building. And I have always loved reading cultural media, you know, like reading the rags. You know, I worked for the Providence Phoenix when I was in school, like doing the arts and culture editorial stuff. for the record, you know, I appreciate what folks in journalism are doing to keep on keeping on, you know, from the musician's perspective. I think it's so critical for your next record to be an evolution from your last. You know, you have to be dealing with like larger questions in music and how it relates to your vision.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, so how do you discover music?
Well, I talk to my friends about it still, and I just check in and see what people are listening. I mean, I definitely do rounds of reading reviews. I do still check Pitchfork once in a while to get an overview of bigger albums that I've missed. I listen to a lot of online radio. I'm big into NTS and a lot, and I'm always on the lookout for good programming in that domain. I like to listen to WKCR a lot, or KCRW, sorry, and KXP. All of that stuff is pretty standard for me. I'll try and just have stuff on just to discover and just feel connected to DJs spinning new stuff. I still go to record stores, you know, and see what's out there. My friend has a record store in Brooklyn in Red Hook that is like a almost community center, and I learn about a lot of music that way. It's on Van Brunt Street.
Oh, cool. What's it called?
It's just called Record Shop on 360 Van Brunt.
Nice. And
Benny, my friend Benny, is the proprietor, does everything from like haircuts to concerts in there. I occasionally will do a bunch of like roaming around Bandcamp, buying tracks for DJ sets. It's helpful to be actively DJing because to keep things fresh for yourself and your audiences, like you just have to do that work.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
So I think I'm probably not an average example because on some level I've professionalized some of my discovery, but also I'm surrounded by other people in music and we're talking about it and sending each other records and recommendations a lot. And I do a lot of sessions with people, and usually the first thing that you talk about is like, oh, what music are you inspired by right now? And almost always I'm getting tipped off to new stuff. So I'm thankful for that, you know,
for sure.
Because it's a practice, you know, it's like it is not going to come at you out of nowhere. And no one place can curate exactly for you, you know, and also fuck that. It should be a bit of a lived process of discovery. That's part of the joy of it.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Absolutely. I mean, music is inherently human, and you know, there's not a one-stop shop for anything. So,
and I think it's great when artists are also curating big playlists. Like I love Fortet's playlists, you know.
I do too.
They're just wonderful. I feel like a lot of people who are fans of Kieran's are benefiting a lot just from his curation. And so everything's so atomized that it's become, I think, part of your responsibility when you have some followers to help people discover new tunes, because it ain't easy for anybody.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hard part. I mean, how do you come through the deluge when there are, you know, 40,000 tracks being added to Spotify every single day?
Maybe 10 years ago, I would have this routine. I would like get up, I would have a coffee, and for like maybe half an hour, I would go to different MP3 blogs. I would download all of these different MP3s every day from journalists that I knew and trusted, and I'd make a playlist, and I'd walk around with my iPod with those tunes and listen and learn. But I don't even know where I would do that anymore. I mean, it's cool to have like a daily new release playlist, you know, and you can do it. Maybe it's like 5 songs long, but man, if you can find one good one every day,
yeah, that makes,
you know,
it all
for
worth
you,
it.
That's like a big win.
When you're matchless in the fascists burn down stove, clear the ashes from your old sunglasses, walk straight to my door.
Yeah, so what are you working on right now?
So I just finished a couple of singles that are gonna go out on this new label called House of Feelings that my friends Maddie Fasano and Dale Eisinger have started. Actually, they started the concept of House of Feelings a while ago as like a band, and then it became a party, and then it became a label. And they are extremely community-minded. Like right now, the whole operation is just about providing their immediate kind of peers and connected artist friends a platform because it's just so hard to cut above. It's been great working with them. We did a label party in January, and it was like a really rainy, snowy, shitty January night, and Transpicos was still packed, you know, just because they've done a great job of consciously making it a community label and a label community. And I feel very thankful, you know, because I had this kind of thing in Berlin. I had, you know, a friend's label that was community oriented to release on. But now this is fresh again, because for a couple of years, I wasn't releasing on any label. And I, you know, the mechanics of releasing were more difficult, but it wasn't even that. It was just like psychologically difficult to like not have any other person pre-release, like excited about your music, offering a sense of comfort and exchange and recognition beforehand, because it's nerve-wracking to release music. Those two singles are off to mastering now, and I'm really excited about them. I think they expand on the territory of my last full-length Shock by Shock, but are a little bit more concise. I did all of the instrumentation and production and mixing myself. I'm mixing with help from my friend James Hinton, who's also known as The Range. You know, still just stacking up more material before I have like a working title or a full-on direction. I want this record to feel like moving from darkness to light, cool, spiritually, personally. I want it to focus even more on just the bare essentials of my songwriting practice, like good texture, good melody, and a hefty dose of voice, and using my voice in ways that I haven't before, exploring different registers, different characters, that kind of thing.
But yeah, man, I appreciate it. Thanks again for taking the time.
Yeah, you bet. Take care of yourself and stay sane, all right?
Yeah, well, you too.
Cool, man. Talk soon.
All right, man. Bye.
Go sign the contract. Stand on your neighbor's back. A view of the sunset behind the palms. Plant a flag in the dirt. Get your name on the shirt.
I want to thank Andrew for his time, his music, and for having such a community-driven ethos. Communities spiral outward and connect you to people and places all over the world, and they provide a foundation to test the waters, to build confidence, and to establish your own identity as an artist. All the tracks you heard on this episode were written by Andrew and shared with his permission. Remember to check out his music under both his name and the Visuals handle, and get excited for what I'm sure is going to be a fantastic next release. All of the other sounds on this podcast were done by me. I'm McKeegan Boyce. Community Matters is a production of Grey Matter, where our mission is to build meaningful engagement through human-based music discovery. For more info, you can follow the link in the podcast description. For more evidence of music community, subscribe to the Grey Matter blog on Medium, check us out at greymatter.fm, or follow us on Instagram or Twitter. And tune back in next week, where we'll once again explore why community matters. Thanks for being here.